Welcome to the Smart Investing Podcast, brought to you by Money and Me, an investor education and awareness initiative by PGIM India Mutual Fund.
Welcome to Smart Investing Podcast, where we simplify investing and bring clarity to the decisions that truly shape your financial future. Now, when most of us think about investing, one word immediately comes to mind: returns. How much will I make? Which investment gives the highest return? It's the question that dominates conversations, headlines, and even personal decisions. But what if that's not the best place to start? In today's episode, Ravi and Lisa are flipping that perspective. Instead of asking, what returns can I get? We are starting with a more fundamental question. Why am I investing in the first place? Because the truth is, your goals, whether it's buying a home, funding your travels, or building a retirement corpus, should shape every investment decision you make. Returns, risk, time horizon, asset allocation, they all fall into place after you define your purpose. Over to you, Ravi.
Thanks, Jude. Post-COVID, the Indian investment landscape has seen a structural shift with a sharp rise in retail participation through mutual funds and direct investing platforms. So this has led to an important evolution. More and more investors now are making independent decisions, which is DIY investment decisions. Now, in a market environment characterized by high volatility, DIY investing brings both its opportunities and risks. So in this episode, we'll explore how mutual fund investors can approach DIY investing with clarity and discipline. So we have with us Lisa to help us decode how you can navigate the current market confidently as a DIY investor. Hi, welcome, Lisa.
Hi, Ravi. Good to be back.
So, Lisa, first and foremost, if someone wants to invest in the market now, given that the war is also almost over, you know, how should they go about? Because everywhere we see only returns dominating the picture. So how should DIY investors, you know, start to begin with?
So Ravi, you have rightly pointed out that returns do take center stage when it comes to investment choices. However, I would say before everything else, investments should be about the why. Why am I investing? It is the first question you need to answer, and not how much return I will make.
So what exactly is this why, and why does it matter so much?
So, you know, the purpose of your investment is what determines where you will invest ultimately, and also for how long. Both these together then point to the right asset you need to fulfill the why. How and where you invest for building a, you know, like a down payment for your home loan or your annual travel spends, for example, will look very different from how and where you invest for your retirement. So returns are not also delinked from risk, right? And every single asset or financial security you invest in has some kind of risk embedded in it. Fixed deposits, for example, come across as risk-free, but they do carry inflation risk, which means that returns in the long run can be suboptimal. On the other hand, equities come with the more visible risk of volatility, which means returns in the short term can be unpredictable. Thus, the return expectation is then built around these risk features. Which asset to select has to be linked to the purpose that we spoke about earlier rather than the return. In other words, you have to set a goal. That's it. That's the beginning.
Right. The purpose is very important. So you have to set your goal first. So I want to earn a good return. Is this also a goal I want to save for my future? I know it may sound, you know, vague.
See, if you really want to increase your chances of achieving a goal, you need to do more than just have a vague sense of what you want in the future, as you were saying. So the goal statements that you mentioned, like I want to earn a good return or I want to save for my future, they could be goals, but they're non-specific. In our minds, there is no clarity of what makes for a good return or how much one needs in the future. If you begin now from a place of blurriness, in your goal instead of clarity, the results will also be blurry or vague. We have to keep that in mind.
Right. So as a DIY investor who does not have a financial advisor to guide you, so is there any thumb rule or how you should go about prioritizing your goals?
Yeah, so there is a, there is a framework in which you can sort of state goals clearly. And that is the most important thing to do, to state goals clearly. The best practice really is to write them down. Goals which have the highest probability of achieving success are what we also call SMART goals. That's S-M-A-R-T. And I'll explain that. These are goals that you are going to define really in terms of what specifically you want to achieve. And that's your S. It has to be specific. The M stands for measurability. So if your goal is to save for the future, try to be specific and think of what in the future are you saving for? Is it a house? Is it your retirement? Or is it your venture? Now measure that quantitatively. So for example, a house worth at least say 2 crores, or are you putting aside 1 crore to start a venture? What is the measure of that? I mean, what is the, how do you quantify that goal? Then we get to the A, which is for attainability. So you check, given your income, your expenses, your goal timeline, can you achieve what you have written down and measured? So for example, you're saying my specific goal is to start a venture and I want to set aside 1 crore. So what your financial status is today, does it cater to this goal being attainable or not? That's the A. Next is the R, which stands for relevant. Goals should be aligned to your life's values rather than something that your neighbor is interested in. If you don't like luxury cars, for example, that goal is irrelevant for you, even if you are a high earner and you can afford to spend, you know, anytime now or in the future. So make sure that the goal is something that brings value or adds value to your life and your family's life. That's the R. Lastly, we are on the T, which is for time horizon. Without a defined timeline, fulfilling any objective is going to be difficult, and it's not different for financial goals. So where we began, I want to save and invest for the future to start my venture, 1 crore. You have to define the timeline also. Is it that you want to start the venture in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? That is going to also determine whether the goal is attainable or not for you. So this is the most effective way to start thinking about your one or many goals. It's an exercise which does take time and has to be repeated maybe every few years as your goal posts shift, but definitely worth your time. And here's an example of a SMART goal. So I want to have, as we were talking about the venture, so if you want to have 1 crore or 50 lakhs to start your AI venture in 5 years by investing 40,000 every month in a diversified portfolio with medium risk. Now this sentence, I want to have 50 lakhs to start my AI venture in 5 years by investing 40,000 every month in a diversified portfolio with medium risk, covers the specifics of what the goal is and how you're going to achieve it.
Right, Lisa. So it sounds very structured, but not everyone may be that disciplined to follow it. So let me bring in the time horizon in this discussion, because asset classes are very volatile these days. So if someone starts investing now and sees a correction maybe in 3 months' time, so how do you account for the time horizon when you decide for the asset allocation for DIY investors?
Yeah, that's a good question, Ravi, because it is critical to the choice of assets and how you anchor expectations around outcomes. The time horizon really matters, because equity markets firstly don't move in a straight line, and that could be a big portion of your asset allocation. They go up, they come down, they stay flat for months, sometimes years. If you are invested in equity and your goal is 20 years away, a market fall of 30% today doesn't really hurt you, right? You have time. Your SIPs will continue to buy units at lower prices. And when the market recovers, you benefit from those lower cost units too. But if your goal is just 2 years away and the market falls 30% today, you might have to sell at a loss because you need the money in not so distant a future. So time horizon is essentially your safety net. The longer it is, the more risk you can take. The shorter it is, the safer you need to play it. Similarly, if you use a 10-year fixed deposit, right, with an auto-renew towards your retirement kitty, you will realize that your investment falls short as fixed deposit returns don't beat long-term inflation. At least that's what we've seen typically. So for goals that are beyond 10 years, you need to invest in assets like equity. So again, time horizon matters. Unless you define this timeline for your goal, each of your goals, you will end up investing in assets that don't match in terms of risk and return expectations for that tenure. And ultimately, it will be a disappointment and could even be a missed opportunity.
Right. I think we have discussed about goals and the timeline. So how do we select an appropriate asset allocation which match these goals and timeline?
Right. So we begin with the goals, the why, and then move to the timelines, which are important. But without exaggeration, asset allocation is the most important decision in your investment journey. More important than the specific funds you choose to kind of cater to your goal. Studies consistently show that around 90% of your long-term return actually comes from how you allocate across asset classes, not from which specific funds you are in. The basic idea is that different asset classes, equity, debt, and gold primarily, don't always move in the same direction at the same time. When equity falls, debt is usually stable. When currencies weaken, gold often rises. By spreading your money across these, you reduce the chance that everything falls at once. Thus, you are balancing risk. But you need to do this in a way to optimize returns as well, right? Such that your goals can be achieved. The age rule of thumb for asset allocation is popular, which is 100 minus your age in equity. But I would urge you to go deeper. A young earner with a large home loan, for example, may not be in a position to take high equity risk. So the rule may state that you should invest more in equity, but you may not be able. Similarly, an elderly retiree with a substantial cushion may still be able to keep more than 50% of the corpus invested in equity. In my opinion, the best approach is to map assets to your goals. So we come back to goals. When you do that, you will automatically have one basic level of diversification. Once the base goals are catered to and your portfolio continues to expand, that's when you start experimenting the allocation with the incremental surplus that you're investing. So the new money that you keep investing. Otherwise, for near-term goals that need stability and safety in returns, it's deposits and low-duration debt funds. For medium-term goals, say 3 to 5 years, it's a combination of equity and fixed income. Hybrid multi-asset funds work great. For goals beyond 5, 7, 10 years, growth assets like equity are your best bet. Real estate is also a growth asset, but the risks are very different and you may need large sort of capital size to begin. Now, if your stable return needs are greater, your asset allocation may tilt in that direction. Those kinds of assets and vice versa. Gold is there for diversification with say 10-12% of your portfolio. Once this base is set and cooking for a few years, then start to add alternates like currency or startups or any other alternate investment you desire to explore. So your asset allocation anyway is not set in stone, right? You can revisit it once a year or whenever there is a material change in life stage or life goals and rebalance accordingly.
Yes, asset allocation, can be flexible. Now that we have the asset allocation in place, now we come to the next question of which funds you should pick up, because there are a plethora of choices. There are several categories, and within categories, you have so many funds. And, you know, we see launches of new funds every month. So how does an DIY investor begin, you know? How should he start?
Yeah, so, you know, it sounds difficult to do in today's times, but one has to start by ignoring last year's returns, seriously. The most common mistake is to look at which fund gave, you know, the highest returns, 30, 40% nowadays, you can see across funds, and then put your money in that. That number tells you almost nothing about what the fund will do next year. What you want to look at are a few consistent factors. factors or features. First, the fund category. Make sure that the fund matches your goal and time horizon. As we discussed, don't put a two-year goal into a small cap equity fund, right? You have to have that much rationale. Second, look at the consistency of returns, not just 1 year, but across 3, 5, and 10 year periods, and look for rolling returns, which tell you how a fund has performed for a particular period every day in the last, say, 1 year or two or whatever duration you may select. For example, a fund that has delivered 11-12% consistently for 10 years is far more valuable than one that gave 40% once and then 5% for 3 years after that, or something that's, you know, volatile like that. Third, compare returns to the benchmark and to a defined peer set. A fund is supposed to beat its benchmark, the index it is measured against. If a large cap fund has consistently underperformed, for example, the Nifty 50 index over 5 years, there is no reason for you to be invested in it. Within the peer set ranking, a fund will rarely be on top all the time. Look for funds in the top quartile or 25% of that set. Fourth, look at the expense ratio and assets under management. This is the annual fee the fund house charges you. In index funds and ETFs, the expenses are low, roughly between 0.1% to 0.5% a year. In actively managed funds, it can be 1 to 2.5%. Lower expense ratios, especially in consistent funds, are always better. The AUM does not determine performance success, but when you are filtering through thousands of schemes, looking for relatively larger schemes which also tick the boxes discussed above is better, as the scheme is already carrying many other investors in its boat, and perhaps that shows some trust. Lastly, check fund manager tenure. If the fund has delivered great returns, but the manager who built those returns left 6 months ago, you need to factor that in.
Great. So I think these are very good filters to choose your funds. And I think many investors can be overwhelmed with the choice because there are too many schemes across fund houses within one category. So can you give us one simple portfolio, like what kind of funds people can have in their portfolio, because investors might end up, you know, having multiple funds within the same category, like large cap. If you have so many funds in the large cap, it won't add to your diversification, right?
Yeah, absolutely right, Ravi. It is best to keep it simple. You do not need 15, 20 or more funds. You do not need to own every category even. A well-constructed portfolio of 5 to 7 types of funds can cover all your needs across all your goals. Here's what I would do. I would begin with a liquid fund for emergency saving, because that's stable. A short-term debt fund for goals that are up for completion in up to 2 years, so short-term goals. A gold fund for inflation protection, say up to 10% of your portfolio. A large cap index fund as the core long-term inflation beating wealth creator in the portfolio. One can add a flexi cap, one mid cap, one international diversified fund, and a multi-asset fund to this mix. These are all long-term wealth creators. You can add small caps too, but not everyone has really the appetite for that kind of volatility, which we can see in the small cap category. So these are 8 key funds. And for most people, you don't need any more. Also, you may not need all 8 at once. If you're young and have only long-term goals, maybe 3 equity funds and 1 gold fund is enough. As you add goals at different time horizons, you add the relevant type of fund that will help you achieve that goal. Within each category, it is sufficient to pick just one fund. 2 large cap index funds, as you were making that point, are not better than one. That's just duplication. The whole point of a simple portfolio is that it's manageable, understandable, and easy to track. Everyone's portfolio at the end will look different, though. The allocations that we're talking about here are just indicative. It depends on your financial life and, you know, what's relevant there. Your personal allocation depends on your age, your risk appetite, life stage, financial position, and of course, your goal.
Yes, I think the less the better to keep your portfolio, you know, clear. Now that the portfolio setup is done, let's finally talk about returns, because that's what many investors would be looking for. So is there a base level aim or benchmark that one should be looking at for wealth creation?
Well, yes, I mean, we all need some kind of benchmark, right, in terms of returns. Now, you may want an annualized, like a 10% return, but is it possible given, you know, what we spoke about, risk and life stage goals, etc.? Historical data shows us, without getting into personal portfolios, that from a diversified portfolio, which is at least 60 to 70% invested in equity and growth assets, you can potentially earn 10 to 12% return in the long run, which is 10, 15 years plus, which is what the data you were talking about as well is in that ballpark. Let's look at what a monthly SIP at a compounded annual return of 12% does over time. Okay, so a rupees 10,000 SIP at an annualized 12% return for 10 years will amount to about 23 lakhs, and extend that by another 10 years and you will make close to 1 crore. Next 10 years, a 30-year horizon with a 10,000 rupee SIP will give you close to rupees 3.2 crores. Extend that by just 5 more years and you get 5.5 crores. So the last 5 years delivers 42% of the total return. Even at a 12% kind of return, which is not massive, if you remain invested, you can make a lot. Compounding shows up hugely only after the first decade or two are done. It's not linear progression, it's exponential. For all the young investors who are listening in, if you are doing it yourself, start in your 20s, but wait till your 50s to count the millions from your passive investment. Time is the most powerful ingredient in the compounding recipe. We are tempted to go after return, but time matters more. More than how much you invest, more than which specific funds you pick. Now, even if this 12% return, what we are talking about, is down to 10%, let's say, because of whatever is changing in the world, your 35-year corpus still can potentially grow till up to rupees 3.5 crores, same 10,000 rupees. If you do a top-up SIP, as your income grows, your corpus might be even higher. Point is to begin early, to keep it simple, to stay the course and not chase only return.
Great. So I think compounding is the eighth wonder of the world. Thank you, Lisa, for sharing your valuable insights. And we have covered a lot of ground, and I'm sure this will help a lot of new DIY investors to, you know, start their investments and give a structure to their whole investment plan. So I will just like to summarize my few learnings. So the first learning is start with the why, which is very important. Why you're investing. So basically your goal, whether it's house, retirement, travel, should drive your investment decisions. So the second learning is that goals must be clear and structured. So vague goals lead to vague outcomes. Use smart goals to bring clarity to improve your success. The third learning is your time horizon determines your risk. So if you're investing for long-term goals, you can handle equity volatility well. So, and if you're investing for short-term goals, you need safer assets like liquid funds, money market funds to keep a buffer in your investing. And lastly, asset allocation matters more than fund selection. Your mix across equity, debt, gold can drive most of your returns. So align your allocation with your goals and not generic rules like age. So for DIY investors, clarity of goals, discipline in execution, and patience over time matter far more than chasing the highest returns. Thank you, Lisa, once again for sharing your valuable insights. We'll see you in the next episode soon.
Thanks, Ravi. This was good. Hopefully listeners who are out there, especially the young investors, can take away what process they can put in place for investing.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risk.